Nick, when we talk about earth changes, does that include volcanoes and earthquakes, or is that something else?
No, I think all that really does work together. You know, the systems don't operate in isolation. What we're talking about is really energy exchanges, you know, and in terms of how all of those work and interrelate, that's the nature of a lot of the sciences today, trying to sort of sort that out. As, you know, science has advanced, you know, one time it wasn't but, you know, 30, 40 years ago, everyone thought these were all closed systems operating in isolation. Only, you know, in recent years do you hear more of this larger view, recognizing that there's a cause and effect in all these systems, and underlying all of them are extreme energy exchanges. And so whether it's heat being generated and released from volcanics, for instance, what does that do on the surface of the Earth? You know, it adds to greenhouse effects by putting a lot of particulate matter into the atmosphere. And in the seas, when you think about the seas, two-thirds of the Earth is covered by oceans. Only in just the South Pacific, we know of 1,200 undersea volcanoes. Even in the Arctic now, they know of undersea venting, something that wasn't discovered until the last couple of years. And when the energy of heat is released in the oceans, 100% of that energy is absorbed as heat in the oceans and would look like a plume if looked at from space, say, analyzing the heat distribution in the seas. Whereas light energy, say piercing, coming down from the sun because of ozone depletion, it strikes the surface of the seas, but because of ocean temperatures, the heat is retained at the surface. So most of it's dissipated, reflected away, but it's these undersea releases of energy that change the ocean temperatures dramatically and rapidly, which then drives the entire weather system and the climate change, whether it be cooling or warming, depending on where you live on the planet.
I was reading a report by a scientist today who predicted, without a date obviously, that one day all the oceans on planet Earth will go by the wayside, just like they have on Mars and what he probably believes might have happened on Venus. And that's kind of a scary thought, to imagine this planet without any oceans anymore.
Well, I think that's, you know, geologically, if that were to occur, we're talking, you know, millions and millions of years in all likelihood, if it occurred at all. And you know, the thing about this cycle is it is cyclical. You know, if you look at the ice cores and you look at other geologic records and other records in the fossil record of what's happened, you can see these periods in our history where the heat and the temperatures of the Earth change. Now, that has dramatic effects on a lot of things. You see them again in the Arctic first. As an example, here in my region, we have an area of dead spruce because of a infestation of a beetle that normally would have, you know, died out cyclically in the wintertime and not created the havoc it did. It killed 4 million acres of standing timber. That's somewhere around the size of Connecticut, roughly, in Alaska in the last, you know, several years. If you look at forest fires here, again, something contributing naturally, we have 5 million acres in flames right now, or has burned this summer, which is about somewhere between New Jersey and Connecticut in terms of size. So, and that's this year. You know, we have,
that's huge.
You know, that's a huge, huge contribution to particulate material in the atmosphere, and certainly you know, a big loss of open space. Although, you know, this is something that does happen naturally, and these burns are required in order to you know, really restart the environment here. It's a natural process, actually.
I got to tell you, I was driving several weeks ago on the infamous 405, and I was going north out of Los Angeles, and I'm looking into the mountains, and I'm seeing this huge plume of smoke and then helicopters, and I realize that they're trying to put out this massive fire, and it's really the first. And last year we had some bad ones, but I wasn't really close to it. This time I had an opportunity to really see it, and it's kind of scary, Nick, when you see this thing just blazing out of control. People whose homes are there, there's not much they can do if they live close by, and it's just, you know, I don't know, what is it? I mean, some areas that they're talking about major league droughts now.
Yes.
And, you know, I think Los Angeles and Las Vegas, for example, get most of their water from the Colorado River, I guess. I mean, in St. Louis, where I'm from, we've never had to worry about that. I mean, we've always got drinking water here. But if that river ever dries up, this whole region's in trouble.
Right. And, you know, this is, you know, again, when you think about, you know, glacial melts, you know, up there in the Sierras, you're losing, from the beginning of, say, a century ago, you've got 12% less snow buildup there in the winter months, which is critical to California's water supply. Now, that's according to next month's issue of National Geographic, which just hit the newsstands. And again, you know, it emphasizes this point about, you know, these are known changes that have occurred. You know, here in Alaska, I can take you to glaciers, and there's photographs that are 100 years old, and glaciers were, several hundred feet thick in the area that, you know, that I would be pointing to, which would be in the area of Valdez, Alaska. And yet, if you look at just in my lifetime, in the last 30 years of my lifetime, you've seen here in Alaska the thickness of the glaciers and the ice sheet on the Arctic reduced by 40% in 30 years. And right now it's accelerating. It's running around 9% every decade being reduced. It's not going to be very long. And the way this curve is spiking when the North Arctic Ocean is ice-free in the summer, which is going to be remarkable.
Well, and Nick, and it's not just there. It's all over the planet now. Glaciers are dramatically receding.
Right, and this is a trend that is not, you know, I mean, people are saying, well, it's just, we just observe this. Well, no, you know, those of us who've lived here in this part of the world have observed it. We just aren't a very populated place, so it doesn't tend to make it on the AP News Service. When the glaciers recede in Switzerland, you hear about it because there's a lot of people that live in Europe, live close to these glacial areas, unlike this region of the world or northern Canada or the northern former Soviet Union, Russia, basically. So, you know, when you look at what's happening here, it's pretty much happening everywhere. When you look at the ice mass in Greenland and its meltdown, and that's pushing a lot of cool, fresh water into the northern Atlantic, which is then altering the way the Gulf Stream moves warm water into the European area of the world. And as a consequence, you're going to see warmer summers and more extreme winters in terms of cold throughout northern Europe and central Europe. And this is going to be a dramatic change in terms of what happens there, as well as the distribution of weather systems on the both the Atlantic as well as on the Atlantic side of the United States as well as Europe.